Hello and welcome back to Galvanize. This week I'm joined by John Dan Duncan, who is one of Scotland's leading background artists. He's been in everything from River City to Sunshine and Leith and Outlander. This is such an interesting conversation and it gives you a real insight into the industry. I hope you enjoy.
Hi Karen, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good.
Good. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. It is Karen, isn't it? That's how you pronounce it, yeah.
Yes, it's Karen. Well done. And most people struggle with it, but first time off, you've got it perfect. So thanks for getting that right.
Good stuff.
I'm so excited to talk to you about your time in the TV industry and all the exciting projects you've done over the years. And I think it's something our listeners will really love. It's quite a new area for the podcast. We've got a lot of music guests that have been on, but not really much from the acting side. So it's really something to have you on.
Yeah, good stuff. Good.
So you can enlighten us all. Not at all. So if you don't mind, I'll start off by asking you, what was your career of choice before you kind of got into the TV and acting stuff? Because as we've kind of already mentioned, you kind of got into that on a whim. So what did you do before that?
Yeah, but before I'd done any acting, and obviously while I was still doing my first few years of acting, I was in the fire brigade. I served 25 years as a fireman. And before that, I was in the army.
Wow.
So it was a totally different life to what you would expect, and not the kind of life that you would normally lead into acting, as you would imagine.
I know. It's a very physical jobs, both of them. Was that something that you always had in mind when you wanted to do a career? You had to be on the practical side.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not intellectually, I'm quite intellectually challenged, to be fair. I'm not the cleverest, so everything that I've done was all practical. So,
yeah, and sitting still wasn't something that, excited you.
Pens and paper are not my thing, so.
No, well, that's amazing. And I love to hear transitions and changing out careers and stuff, because that's kind of what all this podcast is about. Often people find what they love after they've done something that's not really them for a while. So out of curiosity, how did being a firefighter transition into the world of acting? Can you break that down for us, please?
Yeah, well, it was actually through luck and a very, very unorthodox way of actually recruiting actors as well. The casting director, Carleen Crawford in Glasgow, was looking for an open water swimmer for the movie Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson movie.
Okay.
And they actually approached the fire brigade, who have a triathlon section, because they knew that we had sea swimmers, open water swimmers in that section. So the fire brigade section came to me and asked me if I wanted to go, through a friend, if I wanted to go in an interview for this particular part, which I did. And after that, the interview was more about for general acting work rather than just for that particular part. And Carly really liked me, and she still keeps in contact with me to this day. She's really nice and been really good and very successful in the industry as well as a casting director. So she's a very good person to know.
Yeah, it seems that way when you get into these kind of creative industries. A lot of it's who you know and the relationships you make along the way, isn't it?
Without a doubt, yeah. It's all about networking. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you went for this interview, how did you feel? Because I imagine it's quite different from what you're used to. You know, the standard interviews where they're just kind of asking you about your career history, your CV. I imagine it was quite different.
It was, but for me, it was totally relaxed, because I wasn't going there for an audition to be an actor. I was going there because they were looking for a swimmer, and I was going to do a sea swim for them and get paid, and that was it. For me, it was just totally relaxed. And she just started asking me all about my life, about my military career and all the rest of it. And it just came out, and she really enjoyed it. She loved my background. We come from a similar area in Scotland, so she knows where I live, and I've got a small farm and a lot of animals. So she kind of knew my area. So we had a lot in common as well. And the interview was really just a really good chit-chat, you know?
Oh, so were you quite surprised when you got the part, or did you feel like it was kind of made for you?
Well, that particular part was, you know, it was a very, very small, it was basically just a swimmer in the sea at a distance. But there was other parts in the movie that they got me in as well. But at that stage, everything was just background stuff, really deep background stuff. So yeah, there was no pressure, no expectation. It was just easy background work, you know.
And I think this goes without saying, judging on your career thus far, but I take it you enjoyed your first experience on set.
Loved it. Absolutely.
Did you?
Yeah.
And what was it about that you loved it?
Well, it wasn't so much that particular experience was okay. What I loved about that was getting paid for doing very, very little.
Yes.
But the experience for the next movie, when I moved on to Sunshine on Leith, I just had a very, very fortunate, purely right place at the right time. A really, really wonderful experience, which became a bit of a reality check when, you know, you have a great part and you're the, you know, and you really have a really good part and speaking part and the rest of it, and you think this is you on your road to stardom, and the next thing you're a passerby in River City, you know. So it was a bit of a reality check after.
So was Sunshine on Leith your second job, and they kind of just gave you a speaking part? And what was that process like? Was that when you kind of committed to acting as a job and left your former job?
No, absolutely not. No, it was still just, I suppose you could still call it hobby stuff.
Right, got you.
For you, extra work and acting work has all really always been hobby work for me. But I was up there. I mean, I'd been recruited as a singer. You know, they wanted a group of people to sing the song 500 Miles. So they brought me into that, and then they told me, actually, it's a dance routine, so I had to learn a dance routine.
Oh my God, that's quite a 180.
Well, I said to them, I says, no, I don't do dancing. And they're like, well, you can go home then. I says, okay, I'll dance.
So, I'd be the same if it was the other way about. If you told me to start singing, I'd be like,
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, wow, what an experience.
So after that, while I was there, the director, he spotted me. What happened was they came into the room and they were looking for this particular thing to happen. I didn't really know my place. You know, you're not supposed to be getting involved with directors and other estate, you know, and there was like 150 people in this room, all these people who were recruited for dancing, and they all knew to stand around and say nothing. But I realised what they were trying to do, and I realised that they weren't managing it, so I just kind of piped in and said, well, I'll show you what to do. And I managed to put Peter Mullen up on my shoulder, and the director just loved it. So that kind of got me on his good side.
Yes, can you tell us that story, please, for the listeners? I think they'll quite enjoy hearing that.
Yeah, well, what happened was the director and Peter Mullen came into the room, and everybody scattered to the four walls to give them the space. It was in a hall which had a kind of balcony. So Dexter went up on the balcony, which would be the camera angle, and he was looking down and said, "This would be the camera angle," and Peter Mullen was supposed to be in this room, looking around it, looking for his wife. But because there would be so many people in it would be awkward for the party. So what he suggested was it would be great if he was above the crowd, if he was up on somebody's shoulders. And Dexter said, yeah, that would be fantastic, but how do we go about that? How do we do that?
Yeah.
So, and I just said, I said, listen, do you want me to show you? And he said, he looked at me like, who the F are you? And he said, yeah, and you go then. So I just grabbed this other guy that was next to me, who became my best pal because I got him a part in the movie. And basically, we just flung Peter Mullen up on him. And we just, it's very, very simple. You know, if there's two of you there, it's very simple to put them up on your shoulders. So we've done that, and that's exactly what they've done in the movie during the Silver Wedding.
Amazing.
We put them up on his shoulder. So it was a good part.
I love how that was just something that happened in the moment, and you just kind of went, you know, sack it, I'm going to give this a shot. And it paid off.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And then subsequently, Dexter came up to me and he said, listen, he says, that was great. He said, do you want to be part in the fight scene? So I says to him, I says, yeah, that'd be great, you know. So we got involved in the fight scene. It's me that I actually start the fight. Because he said to me, he says, I want you to say the line, did you keep the receipt for that? So I says to myself, I says, right, if you're a wee Glasgow punter, you're not going to say that. So I flung in the line, hey, wee man. So I said, hey, wee man, I hope you kept the receipt for that. And he says, what the fuck is wee man? What's wee man? I says, well, that's what you would say. He says, right, okay, we'll go with that. So it just worked out really well.
And they kept that line in the movie?
Yeah, yes, it's a feature part. Brilliant. You know, it's a feature part. Yeah. Basically, he proposes to his girlfriend. I say, wee man, I hope you kept the receipt for that. And he runs over and starts fighting with me, and that creates a major fight in the hall. So that's how it starts.
I love that. And that's something, like, you've implied that the director isn't from Scotland, but they wouldn't know the little colloquialisms and slang.
Exactly.
So it's so helpful for them to have someone who's
you know,
native to the city or the country to actually put the wee spin on it, because that would have made the scene so much more believable, especially from being a Scot.
Yeah. And he was fantastic. He was a Londoner, obviously. I mean, it's Dexter Fletcher. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No, I don't.
He done Bohemian Rhapsody and he done the Elton John
story.
Oh, wow. I should have heard of him.
I've heard of his movies, definitely.
Yeah, he's fantastic, though, you know, and he was so infectious. You know, his enthusiasm was so infectious throughout the movie, you know. Everybody loved him.
Oh, and I bet you that would have just made everyone come to life on set, especially for people like yourself who are quite new to the scene. And
yeah, absolutely.
What a great experience.
He got the best out of everyone. You know, he really got the best out of everyone. He kept saying to everyone, "I'll make you famous, I'll make you famous." That was his line.
Well, that's a motivator for most, so good line.
Yeah. Most directors won't even talk to extras, you know, so it was really, really good.
Oh, that's special. That really is special.
Yeah, especially as a first experience, it was fantastic, really. You know?
Uh-huh. And I can totally see why this is something that you've thought, wow, I'd love to keep doing this, because I imagine it's quite an adrenaline rush when you're on set around all these cool, creative people and making something that's really, really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I didn't tell many people that I'd been in the movie. And I've got friends all over the world from all the different kind of lines of business that I've been in. And, you know, people from all over the world were contacting me. One guy stood up in the middle of an aeroplane when he was watching it in the film, says, "That's my pal."
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What a nice surprise for them watching the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I recognize that face. So you went on from Sunshine and Leith, you mentioned, to River City.
Yes.
And that's a completely different world in itself. You're going from a film that's got quite a large scale production that's kind of all in, very expensive within a short time frame. And then you've got River City, which is a soap that's reoccurring and it's more of a permanent part. So what made you want to do that?
It wasn't what made me want to do it. I was just asked if I wanted to do it.
And oh my goodness, you've been so lucky.
You know? Yeah, yeah. It was it actually came around because the guy who was my agent at the time, he was the barman.
And he said, "Okay,
John, I think you'd be perfect for this, and I need to step back because he had to get too much work on." So he stepped back from it, and I stepped in, and I just loved it, and I loved working with the cast. And one of the cast actually was on Sunshine and Leith, so she remembered me from that.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so that was quite good as well. Good wee link, you know.
And how did the, you know, like, work differ from being in a film set to a soap set? Was there anything that you noticed?
Yeah, it's just there's so much more of a turnover. I mean, in a movie, you one scene, which will last maybe 2 minutes, will take you a full day to do. Whereas in a soap, you're getting through so much more in a day. So it's a case of learn that scene, do it, forget it, move on to the next scene, you know. So it's a lot more high turnover, you know.
And you loved that, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I loved working in River City, yeah.
Aww.
It was good.
And how long were you on the soap for?
I was on it for about 6 or 7 years. That was, and the turnover of staff in that period, the turnover of the extras, the actors in that period was incredible. So I got to work with such a lot of good people, you know.
Yeah.
I think in that period of time, there was, I think, 9 different cast barmen, you know what I mean? So obviously I was the background barman, so I'm there in the background, and the cast come in and do their part as well. And I think there's probably about 9, possibly even 10 different cast barmen.
Really?
Oh,
you never know. It's so interesting to hear about the behind the scenes. So how would you describe a day in the life of being on set? What does that look like?
There's a lot of sitting around, an awful lot of sitting around doing nothing. But when you're asked to basically do what you're meant to do, then, you know, you do it. And it's all about continuity, because you will do the same thing repetitively maybe 8 or 9 times, so you've got to do exactly the same thing every time. Don't get too involved with the cast. I mean, everybody goes up on these things and thinks, "Oh, I'm going to talk to this one, I'm going to talk to that one," and then get offended when an actor doesn't talk to them. But you've got to remember, these people are at their work and they're maybe going over lines in their heads, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, people get offended when the actors don't talk to them, but the actors are, that they're busy, they're at their work, you know. So
totally.
For us, it's just, for extras and that, it's just a hobby, but for these other people, it's their, that's their lifestyle, you know.
Yeah. It's a career, and they've got to turn
it's
up.
It's a good day. It's a thoroughly enjoyable day, and, and very, very social. You know, you know, it's,
yes,
you meet some lovely people. There's some of the extras out there are just lovely people, you know.
And I can imagine being comfortable socializing with new and different people all the time is a real asset to doing something like extra work, where you have got a wee bit of time to spare, and all you've really got is yourself and other people to talk to.
Yeah, everybody's stripped naked. You're out there, and that's it. It's you. And honestly, I've met some fantastic friends, made some lifelong friends in the industry, and it's been great. You know, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and it really, I really have got a fantastic group of friends in that industry alone, you know, so it's really good. More so from Outlander, you know, when we moved on to Outlander, there was a group of us, sorry to jump around.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just going to come on to that next, so it's a perfect segue. Well,
so basically, we started off getting recruited for the battle scenes on Outlander. So straight away, we knew that the group we were going to be in, we're going to be together for a lot of scenes and a lot of days, you know. So you basically have to get on. But it worked out. We're filming through in Crieff, so that's a fair wee bit away for me. So we booked accommodation through there, and there was about five of us who didn't know each other, and we all just booked this cottage in, and we stayed in there, and a kind of Airbnb type thing. And we got on fantastically. To this day, we actually started a group we call ourselves Paka, and it's just fantastic. And the guys were great, and we'd done all the battle scenes together. So it was a real bonding session, and they're just lovely, lovely guys.
Yeah.
One of the guys actually gave up his work as he was a self-employed electrician who made a lot of money doing that, and he gave up his work to become a full-time Outlander tour guide, just doing the...
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And, it makes a fortune doing that as well.
I can imagine. God, that's so popular. I went over to the States a few years ago. I think it was 2015, so a while ago now. And I never really heard Outlander. And all these people were like, you're from Scotland, Outlander, Outlander. I was like, what is this? But it's huge. It. And obviously, your friend clearly loved working on it, if he wants to do that full time and just talk about it. What a cool job that you'd never even think of doing.
Yeah, definitely. And as well as that, I mean, as a side issue, us as a group bought myself all the regalia, you know, the proper old-fashioned type plaid kilts and all the gear and the swords and all the rest of it. And when the Americans come over, sometimes they hire us to go with them to the venues or to go to a meal.
Oh, wow.
Dressed in all the gear. And they pay well, the Americans, so it's worth it, you know.
Yeah, it's a fun little side gig.
Yeah. Yeah, and a Dutch group paid for me to go to Holland to talk to them about Outlander as well. So myself and a friend of mine, Scott Kyle, went. He was one of the principal characters on it, and they paid for us to go to Holland to talk to them about Outlander. You know,
Oh my goodness! There's a whole fan base out there that I never even knew were so into it.
It is massive.
It is massive. Yeah. I think we probably take it for granted because it's Scottish. We're like, oh yeah, that's just like something here, but. You can imagine it's just capturing all the imaginations of everyone that's not local. So that's amazing.
And I think as well as that, because it never ever really hit mainstream television in this country, that it's always been, you know, just one of those things that you would put on Netflix or whatever, you know. Whereas had the BBC picked it up or whatever, it would have been massive here as well.
Yeah, you know? I reckon so. And I think it's going to be one of those ones that'll stand the test of time as well.
I think it will. To me personally, it's starting to fizzle out a wee bit as it moves away from. It's all set in America now, and although I'm still involved in it, I've been in every season. So, and different characters. I've been about 10 or 11 different characters. So, but for me, it kind of lost a bit of the magic when it moved away from the kilts, because I just loved doing the kilts. And historically, it was all true. You know, it was all good timelines. All the timelines were right. Bonnie, Prince Charlie, and all the rest of it. So it was all really, really good. And it was good to be involved with. And I learned a lot of history as well. Embarrassingly, I didn't know as much about the Jacobites as I do now, purely through Outlander. So.
No, that's great. And that's something you're interested in, isn't it? Yeah. History. And I love history as well. I studied it at uni. So, like, all this stuff is gold to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So how was filming Outlander? I've heard, I know a couple of people that have done some extra work and they say, especially for the males, because set back in the day and it's only the guys that would be in the fight scenes, that you can be for hours in the mud. Just kind of enduring that. That's quite different from waiting in a nice hotel room while, you know, the set gets propped up. But outside in these harsh conditions, it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, it was very challenging. And that's when characters come to the fore, you know. And that's how it's good to be with a good bunch of guys, because negativity breeds negativity. You need to walk away from that, you know.
So yes.
If one guy starts whinging, turn your back on him, you know, because as I said, we had a great bunch of guys. We all got on fantastically. But you were soaked to the skin. You were up to your knees in mud. Tops my goodness. And a wee funny story. They had us at the top of a hill once waiting on this scene. And the scene basically was from a long way away. I mean, the camera was about 300 metres away. And all it wanted was this silhouette of the hill with all the line of soldiers with the horses and the flags along the top, just coming over the top of the hill, as you can imagine. So we'd done this scene, but they had us stood at the top of the hill waiting in the right light, the right weather and all the rest of it for maybe about 3 hours. And we soaked to the skin. But at one point, I seen some of the costume lassies coming up the hill with the big bags of jackets. And I thought, oh, thank God for that. The jackets were for the horses.
Oh, you're joking.
No.
They never even gave you a jacket.
So the horses were better looked after than we were.
Oh, man. Well, thank goodness you loved it, because I imagine that's quite, it would be a challenge for most people.
Yeah. You had to love it, you know. But again, as I said, it's just one of those jobs. Everybody wanted to be on it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
You were on there. Yeah.
To say you've been on Outlander is quite special.
Yeah. And as a busman's holiday, the second AD, second assistant directors knew that I was a fireman in a previous, or I was still a fireman at the time, actually. And in season three, there's a scene where the press shop goes on fire.
Uh-huh.
So they pulled me in as a joke, as a laugh, so they had me.
Oh, really?
So I was the fireman at the front of the hose.
Still always using your fireman roots. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's given you quite the identity marker, though, being a fireman, isn't it? You're always kind of picked out for that.
I mean, that's who I am. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, more recently, you've began to start getting roles that have more dialogue in them. And how has that been? Is that, are you enjoying doing that side of it more?
Yeah, it's still occasional, because a lot of the time it's still just background stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the dialogue stuff is good, but there's more pressure on you. There's a lot more pressure on you to get it right. You know, as a background artist, there's not an awful lot of pressure on you. But if you do start to get a wee line here or there, there's just that wee bit more expectation on you, and you've got to get it right. So basically they're saying to you, listen, you've came through the ranks, you're better than that now. Here's what you need to do. And, you know, you have to achieve at that point, you know, because if you don't, you'll quickly slip backwards.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's one of those opportunities you just need to seize and do it well, because they're...
Yeah, I mean,
we all know
but
that...
But as I say, that's not... I mean, I still do a lot of background stuff that's got no lines in it, you know, and I thoroughly enjoy it, you know, it's great.
Yeah, that's so good. So can you tell us any recent things that you've been in?
Recently, just at the turn of the year there, I done a movie called Castle for Christmas, and that was I get brought in as the core for that one. So what they done was they brought in a group of background artists, and they had them there for the duration of the movie. So the movie's set in a small kind of Scottish town, so they had the same characters in the town, if that makes sense. So you're there throughout the movie, which is quite good as well. I also done a movie called Tetris. Again with a fantastic first assistant director, Danny McGrath, who I worked with on Outlaw King.
You were in Outlaw King as well? That was a great movie.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was part of the fight team. I actually got a credit on it, so I get credited for part of the fight team on it.
Oh, so that brilliant. Was
good. But Danny McGrath, he is just so inspirational. He's a fabulous first assistant director. And he really remembered me from Outlaw King. So when it came to Tetris, you know, he knew what he could expect from me, and he was really, really good with me. So it gave me a lot of decent B parts. I think I was in that Tetris film, I think I'm about six different parts, you know, six different characters.
Oh, wow.
I got brought in for the core on that one as well.
And that's amazing. And say someone viewing a film or a TV show, you wouldn't think that someone has multiple parts. It's so clever that the way you guys are brought in absolutely. And they utilise you.
Yeah. And you know, you've got some of the crew saying, oh, this is terrible. It's going to be so obvious because you've got all these parts. You look so differently. The makeup department are so good. You look so different to the extent that I even show people pictures of me in a particular costume, and they actually have to ask, is that you? You know, they can't even recognise me from the picture. So they're very good at disguising you, you know?
Yeah, they are professionals and absolutely, they know what they're doing. But it's all the better experience for you as well
to
do
absolutely.
Six different roles on the one job. It's really broadening your skill set.
Yeah. It was really good fun.
Oh, wow. So we'll keep an eye out for those coming out. We'll see if we can spot you.
Yeah, there's another one coming out called Kingslayer as well. Which I think that'll probably be the first one to come out, that'll be quite good as well. But it was more low budget, but I think it'll actually be quite good.
Yeah.
And because it's kind of period, and a lot of period stuff goes down well. You don't need big budgets for a lot of period stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So that'll be quite good.
Period stuff is all the rage. I mean, just like look at Outlander, Outlaw King, even Game of Thrones. Like everyone's kind of loving that stuff at the moment. So no, I'm excited for that coming out. Sounds great.
Yeah, it'll be good.
And more recently, what projects have you got coming up? Can you tell us, or is it a secret?
It's a secret. I start one next week, and it's a secret. All I can say is it's a Disney project. So over the next couple of weeks, you'll know exactly what I mean.
Okay.
Because it will hit the press. It will hit the press probably next week. You know what I mean? So.
Okay. That's exciting.
It's super exciting, you know. And my thanks go to Ian for the Beautiful Bearded Bastards, because he has just been amazing. He's such a driving force.
Yeah.
You know, and for him to get this work, for his agency to be in such an infancy stage, and for them to trust him with this particular job is an amazing.
That's a huge testament.
You know what I mean? They've really, absolutely, it's testament to who he is and what he is. Yeah, he's fantastic. So.
Oh, wow, I'm so excited for you. Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled.
It's going to be great.
No doubt when it does, the news comes out, we'll put two and two together and keep our eyes peeled for you.
It'll hit you straight away. You'll know exactly where it is straight away. I'm also doing another one just now called Screws in the Kelvin Hall in Glasgow. It's about a prison scene, about a prison, and obviously I'm one of the prison officers in it. But again, just a background prison officer. They've got their main cast. I'm one of the prison officers that's background prison officer. So that should be quite good as well.
It sounds like you've got so much going on. So I take it this is kind of your full-time job now.
No, it's not. I mean, I've retired to the fire brigade now for 2 years, but halfway through the COVID thing, the fire brigade re-engaged me to work with the NHS as a as a COVID manager. So that's what I'm doing just now. But because I'm managing it, then I manage my own time. And if I've got extra work or acting work coming up, then I just say, right, okay, I'm going to do that. You know what I mean? So, and that's my priority, and they know that's my priority.
That sounds like a dream scenario.
It is a dream scenario, yeah.
Takes the pressure off a wee bit.
Exactly. And I mean, it's extra money, but it's not money that I need. So ultimately, if they say this isn't working out, I'll just say that's fine. And I'll walk away from it, you know. So,
brilliant.
Yeah. Because the acting thing, and the background work for me really is, you know, that's the way forward for me. And I don't, listen, I'm not one of these guys who thinks I'm going to be the next Gerard Butler, you know, I'm going to be the next big thing. I just enjoy what I'm doing. It's just lovely work. It's great fun. So,
and to see that you turn up to a job every day that you enjoy, you're already winning at life, because that's everyone's dream.
It is, yeah. And it's actually, it seems a bit unreal actually to call it a job. You know, that's how good it is.
Yeah. It sounds absolutely brilliant.
I'll give you an example. When Ian recruited people to do Peaky Blinders when they came to Scotland. So Peaky Blinders had actually specifically asked for people from the local area, and it was way up in Portsoy, up north in Scotland. So it was really, really difficult to get people. But Ian went up and recruited, and he managed to get the people. And one of the guys had messaged Ian and he'd said, "So, what's the money situation?" And Ian said, for argument's sake, it was £150. Ian said, £150. And the guy says, "That's great. Where do I pay it?"
Oh my God.
He thought he had to pay for being on it.
Oh, well, it just goes to show everyone would love to kind of do, have a wee nose, just see what it's like, even if for a day. And the fact that that guy thought, bless him, that you had to pay to be on it. And the joke is, you're actually getting paid for it. So who's the real winner?
Winner. That's it.
Well, to finish off, can I have a quote from you that you say maybe live by?
A quote, right, okay. There is one that always springs to mind, and it comes from my military days, because obviously I was in the First Gulf War, and on the eve of the First Gulf War, Norman Schwarzkopf came away with a statement, and it's not particularly striking, but it always sticks in my head. And the quote was, it says, "The truth of the matter is, you always know the right thing to do. The hard part is doing it." And that's
a good one.
Schwarzkopf, yes.
Yeah. And it just stuck with you.
It's always stuck with me, you know. And everybody knows what the right thing is to do, but the difficult thing is actually executing it, you know, and actually doing it. So.
Thank you to everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode. And of course, a huge thank you to John Dan Duncan for taking the time to talk to me. I absolutely loved this chat. Remember to share this on your socials and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps and it really means the world to us. See you next week.